Welcome to What Is Going Ohms, transforming your destiny by decoding your emotional DNA, in which hosts Sandy Sedgbeer and Judy Wilkin Smith help you unravel and reframe the unconscious ancestral patterns that may be secretly limiting your success in life, love, finance, and career.
Hello. And welcome to episode 3 of Transforming Your Destiny by Decoding Your Emotional DNA with the founder of System Dynamics for Organizations and Individuals, Judy Wilkins Smith, whose expertise in decoding emotional and organizational DNA is breaking through the limiting cycles of Fortune 500 executives, high-performance individuals, teams, therapists, and families and individuals worldwide. And this month we're going to be focusing on your health DNA. How much of your health is yours, and how much of it has come down to you through your ancestors and not necessarily through your genes, as you might think. Judy Wilkins Smith, welcome back, and it's good to be speaking to you about health this week.
Hi, Sandy. It's good to be back with you. I don't know what it's like there, but it's lovely in Texas this morning.
Oh, well, that's good. We've actually got a really nice day in England. I think it's the first day of summer. We had a week's practice of summer back in April, and then it disappeared. But we might have the real thing now for a little while at least. So let's talk about our health. One of the things that you say is that our nervous system is not just our nervous system. We also have a multi-generational nervous system. And while some of our health responses may come from our own behaviour, our own abuse or lack of self-worth or whatever, oftentimes illnesses that show up may have risen generations ago. So Tell us about this, because this has got nothing to do with epigenetics and, you know, the things, the defective genes or whatever conditions. This is something much more subtle than that, isn't it?
It is and it isn't. It does a teeny bit have to do with epigenetics, because an event can set it off. If you think of something like the Great Dutch Hunger Winter, you can have a precipitating event that creates a dietary situation or a health situation. But what we're really looking at is what are the events that begin way, way back and create a set of circumstances that mean that subsequent generations have what we call a hidden loyalty to that way of being. In other words, we have great-great-grandfather who died of a heart attack, was massively perhaps overweight, or had a genetic condition. Now, genetic condition you're going to see passed down, but you're also going to see the massive overweight piece passed down. And so people become loyal to that, and they'll say things like, well, that's the way it is in my family, rather than, that's the way it is, what can I do? So we become prey or victim, if you like, to the systemic pattern that's in place, and we follow it blindly as though it were our own. But in fact, it began generations ago and has just repeated down. And you see that not, of course, just in health, but in health you very definitely see that at stages. We're all overweight, we're all diabetic, we're all... Now, again, some of these are physical DNA, but some of these have been caused by lifestyles that we then begin to emulate. And so, of course, we think that the future that began many, many years ago is ours. It's not. I don't have to die at 50 like my mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother. If I start to look at what's there, I can change that.
You know, this is something that's fascinated me for years, because there are distant members of my family, and in one of my sister's daughter-in-laws has Crohn's disease, which started when she was in her, late teens. And then the minute her daughter hit puberty, suddenly she developed Crohn's disease. And I thought, well, isn't, you know, that's a bit of a, why puberty? You know, is that something in the genes? Is it something else? Is it, you know, I'm going to be like mum, the loyalty thing, as you say. And then in another branch of the family, somebody had epilepsy, but not because they had, a hereditary condition, but because they had been attacked at one point and, you know, they'd had some, damage to their brain and were in a coma for a while. But then many years later, their daughter developed epilepsy. And so, you know, you could see that wasn't hereditary. So that has really fascinated me. How does that happen? I think you're going to tell us.
Yeah, there are a couple of things. First of all, let's be very aware that there are medical conditions. So let's get that one out the way. But there are things that can't be explained. And that's usually when people come looking. Now, in both of those cases, you have a very strong possibility that there may have been a precipitating event that caused the first. And so the memory of that, or the echo of that, which is a more accurate statement, the echo of that travels down to the next generation if it's not resolved, so that the next generation can look at it. Now, I've seen different things with different conditions, but often it's a precipitating event that hasn't been resolved that we're now then representing, because something needs to show where there's imbalance in the system or what's been excluded. Now, in the case of something like epilepsy, again, there are medical pieces to that. But we also know and have seen in this work that you can get things like a carried anger or an unexpressed anger or an unexpressed or an unresolved pattern. And if somebody was attacked, was that fully resolved? Was it fully looked at? If not, is it being looked at, in a sense, by the next generation? So with any of these pieces that pass down, it's not enough just to look at the medical side of it. You really want to look at the multi-generational component, because often where the one is stuck, the other one will help.
As you just said, these imbalances, they come to our attention so that they can be corrected. And obviously this applies as much to our physical issues as our emotional or money or relationship issues. But why do certain things show up in the body? I mean, I know you say that the body's up and downs, you know, it's an exquisite compass. Why are they not showing up in a different way? Why is it through the physical system?
Well, often they are showing up in different ways. They're telling you in your language, and they're telling you in your surroundings that things are off. But we also have a very elegant system. What we keep ignoring finds different ways to attract our attention. And so the minute we ignore the one, it starts to show up elsewhere. And if we're still ignoring it, it says to the body, well, fine, you're obviously not getting the picture here. Try this. So then we suddenly start anxiety. What can you not stomach? Or stomach ailments. What can you not stomach? Or we're really, really, really angry, and sometimes that expresses as arthritis. Or we have migraines, which is sometimes you'll find in systemic work is love that doesn't know where to land or can't find a place to land. It's been trying to tell us. But if we're not listening, it'll use the body or that part of the system to show up there. So I always say to people, when something shows up in your body, don't be fearful, be aware. It is a beautiful piece that's showing up and saying, hey, you have an opportunity here. If we pay attention, this is a really big opportunity for you to shift this pattern into something useful.
Well, this is interesting because, I mean, Louise Hay's books, I mean, everybody started to believe that if I've got, you know, a problem going on in this part of my body, it means this. It's an emotional thing, usually. But what you're saying has another dimension to that. It may, you know, it may well be showing up, and it may well be that emotion, but it may not be your emotion.
Absolutely. But here's the deal. So if you look at it carefully, it's all about you. It's not about you. It's all about you. So it's all about you because it's presenting. It may not be about you because it's actually multi-generational in origin, but it's all about you because you're the one who can change that.
Mm. In previous editions, you've talked quite a bit about patterns that are, you know, it's their time to rest, or they're trying to emerge and be seen. I read in something you wrote about a pattern trying to emerge in a woman who had a terrible fear of dying. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Because I want to see, why is this emerging there?
Okay, so I think you're talking about the piece about the one who was really afraid of dying because she had seven siblings who had all died young. I think that's
yes.
the one.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So she really kept working and being happy and being present, but she had this chronic anxiety that she couldn't shake. And her parents kept telling her she was a hypochondriac because she was always worried about her health. Understandably, if you've lost seven siblings and you're the only man standing, you're going to be a little bit concerned. So we had a look. She kept saying she had to go to doctors all the time. It still wasn't working. She was this hypochondriac. So I said, well, let's look at both. So we set up representatives for her mother and her father and her siblings, and to have a look at the anxiety and to have a look at the anxiety in particular around her health. And, of course, it showed up quite clearly in the survivor's guilt, in the not feeling stable and present. So, of course, if you look at that, there was your multi-generational and lateral, if you like, echo. We can't live. But what we also discovered was that it wasn't about the siblings. It had been for a long time. We'd focused on that. She'd worked through that. It wasn't just about the siblings. And it was. So the piece where it wasn't was she, as a young kid, had been to the doctor because she had a sore neck. And he recommended a CT scan. And her parents just took her home. They never took her for the CT scan. Now, we don't know what they were thinking at the time, except she said they were the sort of don't make a fuss kind of parents. And they got on and it was all over, but it wasn't all over for her. Because having had those siblings around and knowing that she was the only one who made it, she didn't know in her mind, she made up a story that said, well, what if they're just taking me home to die like the others? So over time, that kind of fades, but the memory of it fades, but the symptoms get louder because she hasn't resolved that piece. When we had a look and we put the doctor in the picture and she realized that was it, there was no more need for the hypochondria. I want to tell you, I thank her often because she gave me a completely different insight into so-called hypochondria. What it was, I have not had the question answered that allows me to know I am alive. And so she had all of these symptoms that kept repeating so that she would go to the doctor and finally say to the doctor, am I going to live? And when she could ask that question, it was done. She did not need to worry about that. She didn't need to worry that she was going to be another one of those siblings. She also didn't need to carry the multi-generational and the lateral nervous system. And she could start getting healthier and concentrate on only her health, not that of her siblings or her being caught in that web. So as soon as she could be reassured that she wasn't caught in the web, she could turn it around and start being really positive about her own health.
So are you saying that all hypochondriacs, there's this unanswered question that they don't even know that they need an answer to?
I would not go so far as to say all, but here's what I would say. If you think or you are classified as one, have a look at what's not resolved health-wise in the system somewhere, because there is a strong chance that something is not being answered or something hasn't been looked at that would allow for that to rest. So the hypochondria is really, from what I'm seeing, focuses on something that hasn't been answered and resolved. So it's still saying, well, you haven't given me an answer. I don't know if I'm okay. Am I okay? Do I need to come back to you?
So it's a bit I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're fine.
I was going to say, so it's a bit like the person is constantly perseverating over the same issue. My health, exactly. Am I okay?
When they are, what you want to ask immediately is, if I am, who wasn't?
Ah.
Or, if I am, when wasn't I? Because it's either who wasn't or it's when wasn't I, and which hasn't been resolved. Once we pay attention to it and look at it instead of ignoring it, we can resolve it and give it its place, and that doesn't have to be there anymore.
So really, what is the difference between a pattern that's trying to emerge and a pattern that needs to rest? I mean, isn't that pattern trying to emerge so that it can rest? Isn't it the same thing?
What it's doing is it's looking at the old pattern or the present pattern, and it's going, you don't work for me anymore. The way that you are is no longer useful. Because don't forget, a solution to anything is only a solution until it outlives its usefulness, and then it becomes a problem. So what may have been a usefulness at one point is now a problem. Mm. And so what you've got to do is you've got to kind of take the solution and re-solution it. So the old way is trying to rest because it's no longer useful. And the new way is trying to emerge through you and say, we could do it this way.
Ah, I see what you mean. So you also shared a story about a guy with digestive issues. And one might think, okay, so there's a history of digestive issues and, you know, he's repeating that, maybe the loyalty factor. But in this particular case, his digestive issues weren't a hereditary factor per se. They were because of stress. And that's where the hereditary bit came in. So it may have expressed in a different way with this guy.
Exactly. So what was happening with this guy was he had digestive challenges. And yes, they were brought on by stress. But it was a symptom for what's not being seen in the family. He had all sorts of things that he wanted to talk about, but he could never ask questions and he could never ask for something he wanted. Because his own father had grown up wanting to please his father, who was incredibly stoic and expected the children to be the same. So what was happening for this guy was he was bottling his feelings, and he was bottling everything that he needed and wanted to say. You might also ask, though, whose feelings was he bottling? Was it just his, or was he representing all the generations of people who hadn't had a voice? And so, of course, what happened, deep conversations weren't allowed, and his body was making him pay. And so eventually he said, okay, I actually asked him, what's the worst thing that might happen if you were to speak out? And he suddenly stopped and he went, oh, you know, they probably won't disown me. They might get a little annoyed, but they're not going to disown me. I'm safe. So when you have that insight and you realize that this doesn't fit, you also want to realize it may have fit years or generations before, but it's no longer relevant here. But then there was also an upside, because he's bottling it up. I always ask people, okay, we have this issue, but let's also look at what have you got from this? And it's not that old thing of what is your payoff or what are you actually getting out of it? It's what did you get? And he realized that having had to bottle it up, he'd learned to sit down and sit back, but he'd become a very good active listener. He could hear what people were saying and he could hone in, because that had taught him to survive. So he could take that piece, but he could also then set down the we don't speak piece and start giving a voice to generations of people who hadn't been able to speak. And he could start stomaching the crucial conversations.
So, yeah, the key here really is about looking for the positive in this, looking for a different perspective on it, so that you can find, you know, whatever's being expressed can be expressed in a more positive way.
Absolutely. Whatever's being expressed, you can express anything you want to if you know how to land it. And the way to land it is to see, how do I land this in a way that creates growth? How do I land this in a way that invites others to look and myself? And what good thing did I take from that? If life has been heavy, but you've managed to hold it, you've become very strong. Do you want to keep holding all those burdens? No. But are you going to give up the strength? No. You can have both.
I'd like to, you mentioned that there are certain conditions, if you like, that tend to surface fairly commonly. Things like addiction, alcoholism, depression, arthritis, backache, you know, migraines, obesity, those kinds of things. Could we run through a few of those? We've got a few minutes before the break, so maybe we could start with looking at addiction and alcoholism. Tell us a little bit about those and what is going on there.
Okay, so with addiction, what you want to look at is, who isn't looking at what and for whom am I paying the price? So sometimes with addiction, what you're looking at is the victim and the perpetrator in one body. There is an excluded victim and an excluded perpetrator. So it is I, the perpetrator, take the drugs or inject them into me, the victim. So you're sitting with the two in one body. Then alcoholism, there are so many pieces for alcoholism, so many. Quite often it is seen in systemic work as dying to the presence of what's in front of you, or slow suicide, or a hidden loyalty to somebody else who couldn't stomach the truth or couldn't see the truth, something that was unbearable.
I mean, alcoholism is something that really does go through many generations. You see it again and again. And it's not just a learned behavior then.
It is not a don't forget, many of these on they're more echoes than learned behaviors. It's a learned response, I guess, in response to some of those. It does echo through, but you always want to look at what was the precipitating event? Because if we can find the precipitating event, then you no longer need to use the alcohol to numb out or quiet an overactive nervous system. It can feel like a friend and a comforter, but eventually you're going to have to process what got you there piece by piece.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to go to a break now. When we come back, I'd like to look at some more of these different ailments that I've mentioned. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and you're listening to episode 3 in a powerfully transformative 7-episode web series co-created with internationally renowned organizational and family patterns expert Judy Wilkins-Smith. We'll be back with more game-changing information on how you can identify your health DNA and transform any health triggers into a launch pad after the break.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Vox Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Join me every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio for Vox Novus, the new voice.
Mental health. Most people think it means mental illness. Most people are wrong. Mental health doesn't apply to just some of us. It applies to everyone. We're all susceptible to anxiety and depression.
They're human conditions, and no person should ever feel embarrassed, ashamed, or be discriminated against for being human. Cracked the Podcast strips away the shame, fear, and stigma by expanding the conversation into areas less often visited, from brain and body chemistry, hormones, food, nutrition, trauma, and the microbiome, to pharmaceutical drugs, psychedelic substances, meditation, visionary experiences, and spiritual awakenings. Cracked the Podcast will explore them all, including the notion that, for many, breakdown can be the beginning of breakthrough. For in the words of singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen, there is a crack in everything. It's where the light gets in. Cracked the Podcast, slaying the dragons of mental health. Join co-hosts Sandy Sedgbeer and Rebecca Shaper on the first and third Thursday of every month at 12 noon Eastern Time.
Coping 19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Welcome back. Judy, we were talking before the show about different ailments that seem to commonly repeat themselves through generations. And we had a look at alcoholism. Tell us about arthritis.
Arthritis. Arthritis often walks into the room as anger or guilt. It's not always the client's condition. Sometimes it's inherited. The minute I hear arthritis runs in our family, I want to know what created the pattern and how and why is it echoing through the system? How is it affecting the current person or patient and what they can do with that to start changing the pattern or that nervous system piece that's gone wacko? So quite often it's also an issue around belonging, and you want to see who's been excluded, what's been excluded, and how can it be given a place in a way that reduces inflammation? In other words, was there an inflammatory event to begin with?
What about depression?
Wow. Okay. So depression, often a lack of energy. If you ask people who are depressed, they'll often tell you, I don't have the energy to get up, to move. What sometimes is happening in systemic work is they don't have the ability to receive the flow of energy from one generation to the next or from one parent. And so there are connections that are not made. There's love that's not given. There's a worthiness that's not felt. Something went wrong. It's all over. And they can't see beyond the hole they're in. And so what we look at is, what was the event? Where is the connection that's been lost? What is the language that's keeping you stuck? And how do we get you to feel your way out of that and into the flow of life again? There's another one that comes with that too, though, and that is depression can often be, I'm stuck in a pattern that needs to end. It has to stop. So where I say to people, if they're telling me this has to stop, pay good attention to that, because on the other side of the depression is the happiness. It's waiting for you. It's actually saying, come on, this piece is over. Let's complete this so that you can move into what you really need and want to do instead of staying stuck where you are.
Yeah. What, that makes sense. What about obesity? I mean, yes, we do know it often runs in families, and a lot of people dismiss it as, oh, you know, we've got big bones in my family, or low metabolism, or whatever. But there are hidden reasons as well. Tell us about those.
Absolutely. There are many hidden reasons. So some of the ones that I see are, I usually will ask somebody, when did that happen? When did you notice that it started to happen? What was happening in for you at the time, what was happening in your family at the time? Is there a history of obesity? When did that start? What was happening for them at the time? There are, as I said, there are many. Maybe I had to eat a lot because I didn't know where my next meal would be coming from, and I passed that on to my children. Maybe I had to expand my math to include missing ones. Maybe I had to become obese to protect myself, so it's almost like a body armor. And then there is a lovely one that says, what I cannot take into my soul, I will take into my body. So here's what I see quite often that's fascinating. We've got two kinds of food, emotional food and physical food. Ideally, you want a finite amount of the physical food and an infinite supply of the emotional food. But when we don't get the emotional food and nutrition, we confuse the two foods. And so now instead of getting the endless or limitless supply of the emotional food, we take that over into physical food. And we don't understand why we're suddenly needing to eat all of that. And then there's one other that bears mentioning, and that is sometimes when a parent is struggling, a child doesn't want to be a burden to that parent. And so they give themselves nurturing again by eating the physical food instead of the emotional food, which they don't have access to.
It's very interesting how when people fall in love, particularly women, they often go off food and lose weight.
Absolutely, because now they're forming a connection and they can get nurturing. The nurturing that's absent is now available in a different space. There's just one thing to know, though. If that isn't resolved, if they don't know what was happening in the first place and they can't pivot to a healthier pattern, you may find that they lose it only to gain it because they still haven't resolved what caused it in the first place.
Yeah, that makes sense. Infertility, you say that this is one of the most interesting spaces to explore systemically. Why?
Because there are so many reasons. It's not just infertility is infertility. We are elegant in the ways that we will switch our bodies on and off, where we either feel safe or not safe to pass on or create life. You can find that there's been a rape. I don't feel safe to bring life into the world. Or there's been a rape, and as a man, I don't feel safe to pass on life or create life. How dare I? In my family, there was this history of rape. I'm not going to do that to another woman. It appears when children had an unhappy childhood, I'm not doing that to my children. So the mind is pretty powerful when it comes to infertility. Again, in each case, you want to go back to the precipitating event. I've seen people who cannot conceive other than in a hospital because there was rape. Sex was dirty. How dare anybody invade my body? But if I go into a hospital where it is clinical, allowed, and sanctioned, I can fall pregnant.
Wow. So how do we, how do we begin to identify these patterns? I know that you have said that you've got an exercise that you do with people, with paper on the floor. Tell me about that and how it works.
Okay, so there are a couple of things that I do. But the exercise with paper on the floor, I'm trying to think which one you are referencing.
It was one about how you can actually start looking for the health condition. I think there were... it's a little while since I read it, so I don't remember the details of it.
Okay, but let's have a look at how do you start looking at health anyway. Let's just have a look.
Okay.
So to do an exercise with the pieces of paper, what I want people to do is to have a look at, does my family typically identify with illness or does it typically identify with health? So those are your first two pieces of paper. Illness or health, if you put those down on the floor and you stand between them, you'll start to see which one are you pulled towards. And then you want to see, okay, to whom might that belong, mom or dad? So you could put down a piece of paper for mom, a piece of paper for dad. And a third piece, which is the event or an event. When did I start getting ill? Then allow yourself to just be aware of which one draws you. Now, what you want to also ask yourself is, where am I not healthy? What does that sound like? It's a stomach issue. It's arthritis. It's in the family. So you're looking at those, standing on those pieces of paper, and then you want to see, so what is it that I most often hear about this condition or tell myself about this condition? And when you know what you're telling yourself, I can't stomach this, I can't stand this, again, where does it go back to? Which event? And so, go ahead.
I was going to say, this is a bit like using your body as the compass, isn't it?
Using your body
as a pendulum.
Very much. And you know, the thing is, we all think that this sounds like magic or woo-woo. We're doing it all day long. If I really put down those three pieces, you will pretty much be able to walk to one of those and tell me, this is what I feel walking to this. This is what I feel when I walk towards Mom. It's got nothing to do with Mom. This is what I feel like when I walk towards that. Well, he had that. Okay, so now I'm aligning with Dad's side. What lives in that side? So that's the one. So that's your frustration, is that illness, right? The dream is, what would it be like without the illness? So what we do is we first visit what that illness is and that event and where it belongs. And then what we do is we start having a look at the language, the feelings, the actions, and we see how it's systemically representing in your body. I'm not worthy. I'm too afraid. I'll never get better. I'll never be able to do what I want. And then we have a look at, so what would it be like if you did do it differently? And what do we need to do that differently? Not just physically, but what are the thoughts, feelings, and actions that need to change in order for your body to be able to breathe, your nervous system to be able to realign, and the body to be able to get into a state of health again.
And pivotal to all of this is finding the root, isn't it? I mean, you know, we talk about things like using your body as the compass, you know, the pendulum, so to speak, but and talking to your body. That's another thing that people do quite often, but you say it's not enough to talk to your body and tell it what you want if you haven't found what the root is, because, you know, there may be something beneath that.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the other things that I would say do is put down the health condition, walk towards it, ask it what's going on. You will find that it resolves into either an event or the family system. Now, here's the piece. If you cannot find that event or the family member, because this can happen, you're not stuck. What you're looking at is, what am I doing? What are my thoughts, feelings, and actions? What do I need to stop? And what do I need to start? So you're not stuck if you can't find the root cause. It is much better to find the root cause. But what you can do is you can actually put a peaceful root cause, a representative, and you can acknowledge there is a cause here. It's time for me to set down what I'm doing, and it's time for me to take a different step. So what is the one step that I need to stop, and what is the one step that I need to start in order for things to shift just a little bit?
Do you think that when you have these ahas, you know, I get the, you know, walking towards the pieces of paper thing and the epiphanies that we can have there, but do you think that having that epiphany is enough on its own?
Well, here's the piece. No, it's not. Because if you're doing a head game, it's not going to do a thing. And this is true for just about anything, including modern medicine. If you're not participating, it's not going to move. But if you walk in and walk towards that and you have that aha and you go, this is what's happened. Okay, I need to go and look. Where did that start? If I can find it. When am I aware that I first started doing that for me? How did I get into this situation? Okay. So having had that insight, what is it that I need to do differently? Because if you have a look at where you are, you'll find that you're in a lower state of emotion quite often. But once you look at it and go, I've looked at you, I see you, I'm finally looking at you. Okay, time for us to do something different. That swings open the door, the hope, or the I can, swings open the door to possibility. And now it's, if I'm to change this, just one step at a time, one thought, one feeling, one action, what is possible for me? And Sandy, sometimes it's as simple as, everybody in the family had X disease. I see that I've got the same predisposition. They wouldn't take a medication because we don't take medication. What would happen if I did take that medication? Hey, I might have a very different and healthy life. So it's looking at what has got me prisoner and how do I walk out of that prison? Because the minute I do, I give my own body the ability to heal and I pass that on to my children. In other words, we are not stuck. Or, as you would have read in the book, the guy whose whole family had heart disease, and it was an inevitable thing, and people all dropped dead at 50, and he went, I don't think so. So he went looking, he acknowledged what was there, he looked at the DNA component that was there, and then he said, what can I do? And he began, instead of making excuses, feeling sad, feeling down, feeling condemned, he began to create a healthier lifestyle. So they knew it was there, but they knew how to maximize around it. So we're never stuck. We just sometimes think we are.
Well, and sometimes we don't think at all. You know, we just accept.
And don't think at all. Exactly. Well, we're paid very much or not paid. We're taught from small. It's not your place to think about your body. That's somebody else's place. Well, the doctors and the medics can only do so much. It's when you, and you hear this all the time, they will tell you, they know when they look at a patient who will do well and who will not, based on what is in the mind and based on the attitude. So if you've got somebody who's really ill, they'll go, well, I'm going to die, just like the rest of the family. Or you have someone who says, yeah, no, I don't think so. This is not working for me. We need to do something different. And that's when things change.
Yeah, we do have the power to reject it if we don't want it in our life.
We have the power to either reject that or we have the power to do something that is not going to make it a fatal flaw.
Yeah. Now, you also say sometimes the illness is the cure. What do you mean by that?
Absolutely. I have seen this and I want to tell you it is beautiful to watch. So I have somebody I know who was very, very proud of the fact that they never, ever took money from their mother and father. The siblings all did, but they never, ever did because they thought that was not nice. But there was a sort of a bit of simmering resentment because all of the siblings had gotten and they hadn't received, but they were not going to take from their parents. So what did they do? They got super ill. And they needed mom and dad to help with the finances. So there was one. The other one sometimes is, I will not take life or I reject my parent. Until the day I become ill and the only one who can look after me is my parent. And suddenly the illness becomes the cure for a relationship that was very badly damaged.
Oh, right. So, yes, I see what you're saying. It's... But that's a tough one.
It's a tough one, but here's the beauty of it. They can also now receive the nurturing and the flow of life that they would not take, which allows the body also to begin healing itself.
This is one of the three principles that you talk about, the belonging, the being out of order, and the balancing of giving and receiving.
Absolutely. If you're out of order and you cannot receive the flow of life, you can find yourself in trouble. When that flow of life is reestablished, you may find yourself in harmony.
Sometimes it's very hard to tell someone who's got an illness, particularly if they've been diagnosed with, one of the shocking ones like cancer, that it could be have an emotional basis or have some kind of generational basis. Have you ever encountered that situation? Because it's a very delicate one, isn't it?
Yes, I have. And the way to do that, you're right. It is delicate because the diagnosis of a devastating disease, I will say often it's not the disease that kills, it's the terrible fear around it. So what you first want to look at is the terrible fear. And it also, when you say to somebody, maybe this had an origin, I've had people say, oh, so it's my fault. So they go straight to fault, which is not the case at all. It's actually your opportunity. So if somebody asks me and if they are open to working with it, I would sit down and we'll look together and say, so when did this start? What was happening at the time? Let's have a look at the origins. Let's have a look at what maybe needs to change. I will only do that upon invitation. Yes, I have seen it work. Here's the deal. At that point, in fact, at the point with all of them, but particularly with a devastating or significant diagnosis, the person does best when they've run out of excuses, they've run out of obstacles, at least things to put up in the way, they've run out of the need to run away, and they are absolutely clear they are going for it. Because when that happens, the door opens and you can work.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, for some people, it's all self-fulfilling prophecy. I knew somebody whose mother died. I think she was in her 60s, something with her stomach. I don't remember what. And he kept saying again and again, I'm not going to make old bones. I'm going to die younger, like my mother did, with my stomach. And sure enough, he got esophageal cancer.
He had a hidden loyalty to his mother. And that's exactly what you see. And here's the other piece that's very interesting to watch. If you're working with somebody who has that hidden loyalty and an inner sentence that says, I am longing to be with you, or I am in good standing when I am like you, if you watch their faces, you will often see a smile that seems at odds with the diagnosis. I mean, it's pretty nasty when you've got this diagnosis, but the person is smiling. What they're telling you is, I am deeply in love with what will join me with the one who has gone before me.
But, you know, the will to survive, the will to live is so strong. Can it really be overcome by a loyalty pattern?
Oh, yes, it can. Very much. You will see people who seem to not be ill at all, and suddenly get very ill at that thing because, yes, they knew it was time to die. If you watch some patients, I've seen patients where they're told they have a certain amount of time to go and they go, okay, and that's it. We are quite capable of overcoming the will to live.
Do you think we should be inquiring about every little thing? I mean, you know, some years ago I started getting migraines out of the blue and I had them for about 5 years and then they disappeared. Should I have been inquiring about that?
You might have, because you might have saved yourself about 4 of those 5 years.
But, I mean, would you say everything?
I would say, here's the frame of reference. Otherwise, you're going to have a lot of people very nervous. It truly bothers you. And it's a big obstacle that the symptom may be saying to you, hey, I'm trying to give you a new solution. If you look at me, I can tell you what's going on and we can work through this together. But the most important piece with all of this, if we look at health systemically, is don't be afraid. Be thankful. Don't be afraid, be excited. Your body is saying to you, hey, we need to have a chat. There's a really big opportunity for you to grow here. Are you willing to take the ride with me?
So it's seeing your symptoms as messages then that you should be listening to.
Yeah, that's what you should be listening to. And really, when it's either persistent to where you go, huh? Or where it's persistent to where it's becoming a problem for you.
Yeah. So,
I promise you, I'm not going to stress about it until it hits number 10. Then I might start paying attention.
Yeah. So for those that want to avoid these situations, but maybe don't have a pressing health condition right now, you know, what advice would you give to them?
Oh, my goodness, yes. You're not going to believe it. It's pretty darn simple. Live in your higher emotional range, elevated emotions. We pull ourselves into a state of not health when we get into the fears, the angers, the frustrations, the downers, the depressions. And when we live in that a lot, that starts to engage the body in ways that are not healthy, because now we're living by the hormones of stress. So if you want to avoid that, it really is the gratitude, the thankfulness, the kindness, the celebration, the happiness, the investing in seeing what's right. As we've spoken before, we have two languages, or we have a whole language split into two halves, rather. The one half is daily life. We've been conditioned to think that it's a real bummer. But there's another one which says daily possibilities, which we forget to investigate. And I would strongly suggest live in daily possibility. Look for what's good. Look for what's right. Look for where you can grow in a really happy way. Remember at the end of each day to thank your body and to say to her, thank you for supporting me.
So you're talking about raising your frequency, your vibration to a higher level and being good to yourself.
Absolutely. Mm. We underestimate the power of doing that thing.
Yeah. Judy, we're almost out of time now. I mean, this is a fascinating topic, and I love hearing the stories that you share to illustrate some, you know, the way this plays out. But we have to call it quits here and now. So very quickly before we close, I think you're doing another free event, aren't you?
Yes, I am doing August the 11th at 7:30 Central Standard Time. There will be an open house for people wanting to know more about systemic work, wanting to know more specifically about the money DNA and emotional DNA. So that comes up August 11th.
Okay. And if people go over to your website, can they register for that?
They can register for that by subscribing, and that'll then pull them in. We know that they'll be coming in for the evening, and they just let us know.
Okay. Judy Wilkins-Smith, thank you for joining us again, and I look forward to talking to you again next month.
Sandy, it's always such a pleasure. Time is too short.
It is indeed. It is indeed. Okay, so we'll be back next month, and that's episode 4, and we'll be looking at, I think we're going to be looking at relationships, the systemic
indeed.
Patterns that play out. So join us in a month's time, and in the meantime, go to Judy's website, judywilkinssmith.com. I think there's a hyphen in there, and you can also find out about Judy's events that are coming up at Disney World later this year. That's it. That's goodbye from me, and I'll see you in a month, next week.